Hello, everyone. I'm Darian Gold, and welcome to All Things Pilates Season 5. There is a collective fascination with Joe Pilates, his method, and inventions. The exercise paradigm continues to evolve, as does our understanding of Joe's genius. So join us, because we know there is always more to explore. Have any of you heard of a method called LDOA? Well, our guest today is Sarah King, a Pilates teacher who teaches LDOA to classical Pilates teachers in Berlin, Germany. Sarah has a manual therapy background, so it's no wonder she was drawn to another type of modality that has hints of yoga, but also offers it with an osteopathic framework. Sarah, hello. Thank you so much for taking time today.
Hi, Darian.
What is the LDOA method?
So this method was created by a French osteopath named Guy Voyer, and his initial goal was to try and help people with back pain. He started creating it when he graduated from osteopathy school. And to put it simply, it's a method where we use the term decoaptation, but a lot of people don't know what that means.
So say that word again.
Decoaptation.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, coaption and decoaption. But a lot of people don't know what that means. So then the term decompression gets used. But recently, another Pilates teacher in Germany that is actually German used a term in German that means decoupling. And I really liked this as a way of explaining it. So you can think of it as the decoupling of a joint. So pulling one bone within the joint away from the other bone within the joint, to put it simply.
Okay. Will you say more about that?
Yes. So there's a different exercise for each intervertebral space within the spine. So for example, there would be one for the level of T7 and T8, where those two joints meet. There would be one for going down lower, L3, L4. There's also one for the hip joint, the coxofemoral joint, to pull the femur away from the pelvis. There are exercises for the entire shoulder complex. And then as you go further, you get into the skull. And yeah.
Is it possible to give us an exercise in the Pilates or even yoga worlds that we can at least get a visual of what the body might be in the shape?
Yes. So the base of a lot of the exercises is dependent on axial extension of the spine. And so what I would compare that to in Pilates would be the flat back on the short box. And so you're trying to get the spine as long as possible and remove all of the physiological curves and stretch the spine in two directions. And actually, for a lot of the LDOA postures for the spine, we have the arms up next to the ears the same way that you would be holding the bar. But then, in addition to that axial extension that you're creating for the spine, we put the upper limbs and the lower limbs into different types of tension to then create the specificity along the spine. So you could say that the flat back and short spine would be kind of like the base of the exercise or the base of the position for the spine to work with.
Okay, that's interesting, whether or not the hips are flexed
for example,
because I'm thinking of sitting.
Yeah, that's okay. One of the things you would play with to create the specificity.
Now, how long has this been around exactly?
So Guy graduated osteopathy school in the 70s. And then he started traveling around Europe and studying with different people, like taking workshops and so, and seeing what people were doing for things like scoliosis and hemiplegia. And then when he saw—
What's that? What is that?
When you have like paralysis on one side of your body from stroke. And so he was looking at what these physiotherapists, for a lot of them were physiotherapists, were doing to treat this. And then if he saw something that he thought was applicable for back pain, he took that and he kind of expanded upon that. And that's how he ended up creating the LDOA method.
So the LDOA method, he graduated in the 70s and then traveled around and kept accruing little pearls so that he eventually would develop his own method.
Yes.
And that method sprouted in what decade are we talking about?
So he started experimenting. So he's from Marseille, and I'm pretty sure he started experimenting in Marseille in the 70s or at least the early 80s. And it didn't come to the United States until, so he was teaching in Canada first, in Montreal, because of the French language connection, I believe. And then there were some people in Montreal taking a course with him that were from New York. And I think this would have been in the 90s. And then he started coming to the US as well and teaching courses in the US. So he was originally teaching what's called his Soma training program, which is the LDOA is a part of this. However, it's a very important part of this. And so I've been studying with him for quite some time, but this information was new to me as of this year, actually, which is that he built the whole program around the LDOA because he wanted people to be able to do the LDOA exercises effectively. So there's a whole strength training program, there's the whole myofascial stretching part of the program, and so on.
And then how did you find LDOA? Where were you?
Yeah, so I was living in Asheville, North Carolina at the time. There were no other LDOA practitioners in that state. And I'm originally from Louisiana. I was at home visiting friends. And at the time, I was just, you know, Pilates this, Pilates that, Pilates this, Pilates that, totally obsessed. And they convinced me to go to an LDOA class. They said, well, our Pilates teacher told us about this, and we think you'd really like it if you like Pilates. So I went, and within, you know, the first few minutes of the class, I was just thinking, oh, how do I learn how to do this? This is amazing, just based off of how my body was feeling.
You recognized right away that this would inform your Pilates teaching then?
Well, I appreciated the precision of it in the same way that I appreciated the precision of Pilates. I had a similar feeling to the way I did the first time I did Pilates, the first time I got on the reformer, just, wow, what is this? What's happening to my body? This feels amazing. And I was so curious.
Everyone says that. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And so it's exciting when you discover something new that gives you that feeling. So it didn't remind me of Pilates. They're definitely very different. The feeling of it reminded me, the way it made my body feel, reminded me of how Pilates made me feel. And I wanted to learn more. So I enrolled in the first course that was happening, the first training course.
In America?
Yes. I actually took the course in New Orleans, but it was my teacher, Scott Herrera from Dallas, came to New Orleans and was teaching it. And the first day, I remember feeling like I was going to throw up because there was the level of anatomy was just so beyond me at that time. And I got nauseous realizing how much I had to learn, you know, how much ahead of me to learn. But it was exciting.
Wow. That does sound exciting. I hope, did you just hear my cat?
No.
Okay. I'm just a little paranoid because he brought in the biggest, thank God it was dead. He got a gopher, whatever it was, he could hardly hold on to it. It was so big. So I'm recording and I look to my right and there's my little boy with this big thing hanging out of his jaw. Anyway, so now I'm a little paranoid when I hear his footsteps. Is there something in his jaw? And we're going to be talking about what is in his jaw towards the end of this interview. Okay, focus. Now, LDOA is good for anyone's body. They just don't have to be a Pilates teacher.
No, it's just, so the reason I teach the training courses mostly to Pilates teachers, I think partially because this is the industry I'm in, but also I think Pilates teachers are very attracted to it. Again, because of the precision of the work, I think this is something that we all appreciate. And it is very complementary to Pilates. So you can look at Pilates as like the strength training and the two-way stretch, the stretch and the strengthening part of it. And then at the end of the lesson, you can give the person a Pilates, an Eldoa exercise that is going to help improve their Pilates exercise or just help address a complaint that they're having with their body. And the great thing about it is the exercises don't require any tools. You can do it pretty much anywhere and it only takes a minute. So people are quite compliant about doing it. Whereas when I try to get somebody to do the basic mat exercises every night, this very rarely happens. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. If we were to take the half hanging or full hanging on the Cadillac, would this be similar after we would have a deep workout when we release and decompress?
Okay. Yes. In the sense of a decompression, yes. However, the hanging on the Cadillac, this is another good comparison. I'm glad you brought that up. This is more of a passive decompression, whereas the Eldoa posture, so the one that most resembles that is the one for L5-S1, which going back to the question you just asked, if it's good for everyone, my teacher says everyone should do L5-S1 every night. This is where you're laying on the ground and you have your legs up the wall, and it's not passive because you're creating a lot of tension in your legs and in your feet and in your arms. Whereas with the hanging, you're, you know,
dead weight.
You're just hanging there. Right? Yes, exactly. Which that's great too, but two very different approaches to it. Yeah.
Those who are listening now who are Pilates teachers, they are probably intrigued by what you're saying. And how would they learn more? And the certification program, you have your own?
And so I teach as part of the Eldoa certification program. This was created in 2013. So they separated the Eldoa into its own program because it's so powerful and there was so much interest in it. It could be a standalone program. And so I am one of the two teachers in Europe, but there's a few teachers in the United States also, including Ilaria Kavagna, who's also a classical Pilates instructor that trained with Romana. She's in New York City. So if you're in the United States, I would check out classes with her. If you're in Europe, you can train with me or with my colleague Peter in the UK. And I think that for Pilates teachers, something that's very attractive about this certification program, specifically for classical Pilates instructors, is typically, anatomy and biomechanics weren't a part of our training. In fact, in some of them, I think it gets frowned upon to even talk about it at all or
yes.
Look into it. And so this training, not only do you get a complementary tool that you can use in addition to the Pilates, but it fills in these blanks about anatomy and biomechanics that a lot of us might have. And so it makes, for me, it made me feel really confident working with people when they would come in, because we get people with back pain all the time that nothing's been able to help them. So they come to Pilates. And this made me feel really secure in working with people with back pain issues. And at this point, any type of joint issue.
I love that. That sounds almost like the missing link to be a comprehensive teacher of the Pilates method.
Yeah, I feel like it is. It fills in that blank. And then I think also it's refreshing because the educational philosophy of Gi's classes is different than the typical Pilates training where you have to figure out the exercises yourself. They don't get like demonstrated and then you all try to make it look this one way. We have to actually figure out how you would get specific to this place and what you would do. See, it's kind of this learning by doing, or not kind of, it is this learning by doing. And you're encouraged to ask questions and question the method and challenge it.
Oh, here we go. We're encouraged
and
to ask questions.
And that's very refreshing,
very
I
refreshing.
Think, also.
Yes.
Yeah. There aren't any absolutes. And I argue with him all the time, and he loves it, you know?
How old is he?
That's actually a good question. I've wondered myself. I don't know how old he is.
Does he have vitality in his body?
Yes. I remember when he first walked in the room, I was like, who's this? And then he would start demonstrating an exercise, and his body just moves with such fluidity and specificity. It's pretty amazing to watch. But yeah, he looked a little goofy to me at first.
Is he still a practicing osteopath?
Yes, in fact, that's mainly what he does now, is just treatment and more just focusing on manual therapy. So he has another course called somatherapy, and that's the main focus now and kind of the more advanced courses. I would love for him to teach more exercise still because he's so tough. But yes, he's got rather magic hands. So I think that's what is in demand now. Yeah.
Ramona had magic hands.
That's what I've heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's I've heard very, that the touch is,
yeah, her yeah. touch and where her hands were an immediate response in the body. And that's hard to teach. That's hard to teach other teachers to have that kind of sensitivity and to have embodied the work at such a level that you can feel the nuances subtle in the body. If a body is moving just ever so slightly, where your hand has to be to either facilitate it or to move it away from where that shape or that inside shape might be going.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that it takes time to find people that could maybe follow in your footsteps to do that. And that, like you said, it takes a long time to develop that touch for yourself. So I think that's where the focus is right now, is on enriching that. And I considered doing the manual therapy program for a while, but I just still feel so engrossed with the training aspect of it and still figuring out so many things with that. I think that would have to come later. But there are a lot of people learning his manual therapy. So even for people out there that are massage therapists, I know there's a lot of Pilates instructors that also do manual therapy. I would highly recommend looking into the therapy side of the program as well.
You are a Louisiana gal. How did you end up in Berlin, Germany?
So I ended up...
You don't even have an accent.
A Louisiana accent?
Yeah, I don't hear it.
Yeah, so I left Louisiana when I was 7 or 8 to move overseas for my parents' work. And I didn't return until I was 18, but then I lived there up until Hurricane Katrina, which was 2006. And I kind of had an accent then, but I've always had maybe this just kind of neutral U.S. American accent as a result
For
of
sure.
moving around a lot. Yeah. So I'd left Asheville and I moved to Atlanta to finish my Pilates training, actually. And I didn't really know where I wanted to be. I'd kind of gotten uprooted from Asheville, and going back there wasn't really a choice. I mean, it wasn't really an option.
Where in Atlanta?
I did my training with Holly Pruell at Pilates of Dunwoody. She saved me. I was thinking about not continuing with Pilates because I had been almost through a program and then got kicked out of the program.
Uh-oh, for asking too many questions.
Sort of. I mean, it was a little more complicated than that, but that was definitely part of it. Yeah. So I went to Holly and Holly was like, no, you're going to be a great teacher. You can definitely do this. And so luckily I had my acupuncture license in the state of Georgia already. So I was able to move to Atlanta and my acupuncture practice took off and I was able to finish my Pilates training there with Holly. But then I couldn't decide where I wanted to be. I don't like driving. So Atlanta was not a long-term option for me. And then my best friend was getting married in Berlin. And I'd been visiting Berlin since I was like 18, 19, back when I...
Uh-oh.
No, but I did.
And you met someone at the wedding.
We went out to a club and... I met a stranger and we were kind of talking about my situation and he said, well, why don't you move to Berlin? You love it here. And I said, I can do that. And he said, yeah, he made it seem really easy. And luckily I can be a little foolish and impulsive. And I thought, yeah, no big deal. I'll learn German. And then I can take this really difficult medical exam in German and do acupuncture there and da, 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 da. Anyways, I followed through and I'm here. couldn't pass that medical exam in German and don't, and kind of gave up on it. I don't think I'll ever pass that medical exam. But now, instead of doing acupuncture almost full time, I'm teaching exercise full time and I love it. So, and I don't think I'll go back to doing acupuncture. And like I said before, not so interested in manual therapy.
But you bring that information and knowledge with you.
100%. Yeah. It definitely informed how I teach Pilates and how I work with the body.
Do you have a studio?
So I opened my own place during the lockdown.
Oh, God.
Because the place that I had been working at mostly, she was going to shut it down because she had a baby. And then the lockdown happened. So then I was teaching everybody just online and going to their houses. And then things started to open up again. And I was like, shoot, I do not want to be running around the city anymore from like studio to studio to studio. I need to get some equipment. And I had just ordered my first piece of equipment that was supposed to be for my flat. It was again, the low chair. And I called Pilates Designs and I was like, can you add a reformer to that order? I had just enough money to get a reformer also in my savings account. So I got that. And
how long did it take you to get your apparatus?
So that one I ordered right before the lockdown, like January of 2020. And I think I got it that summer, or maybe before that even. That one didn't take too long. But then after that, I ordered another order, and that was took forever.
Yes.
To get my Cadillac yes. and my spine corrector. It was a bit of a drama, to say the least.
Yes, that is what I have been hearing. Lots of drama with supply chain issues.
Yes. So now I have mostly Pilates Designs. And then when I wanted to get more chairs to do chair classes, I ordered from Legacy in Istanbul, because they're right over here. And that came real fast. And then I just recently got, because I have a pretty small space, I got these new classical foldable reformers that Techno Pilates is making. Have you seen these?
I've heard about them.
Yeah, I was so suspicious of them at first. I was like, well, that's exactly what I need, but it seems almost too good to be true. So I flew down to Milan and went and visited their
factory.
Yeah, and got to see it, which that was really cool, and got to get on all the equipment. And they're really sturdy and heavy duty, especially for how light they are. And I don't really feel the difference. You're just lower to the ground.
Oh, so you don't feel much difference between either Graz or Pilates Designs?
No, the major difference I would say is I have the archival reformer from Pilates Designs and I have the shorter one, and it's just really hard bodied. So the proportions are a little bit different, but as far as the overall feeling of it, I would say that it feels similar and my clients don't notice too much of a difference. They also say they're impressed with, they thought that it was going to feel like a downgrade getting on the newer one.
Do you speak German?
I try very hard. It's tough. I would say, okay, yes, I speak German quite well.
You teach in German?
No, sometimes when I have to, I can give cues in German, but everyone speaks such good English here. It's really, really difficult to get into practice. Like I have to pay to take lessons, which I'm still doing during the week, just to speak German with people for like an hour straight, because people will switch to English. I've started to get a little sassy about it now. Like when people switch to English, I just keep speaking in German, and it's like, you have to have this attitude. It becomes like this power play of being like, no, I'm sorry, you're going to tolerate my crappy German because this is the only way.
That's funny. You're the boss.
Yeah, you have to do it that way. But yeah, like I did a Pilates workshop that I participated in, and the whole thing was in German, and I understood pretty much everything. So, but speaking it is so much different than listening and understanding. And that's the challenge that a lot of foreigners run into here.
When a new student comes to you, they don't necessarily have much of a background in any kind of exercise. Which hat do you put on in terms of Pilates or L-DOA or your manual therapy background? If you're watching their gait, what shows up for you first?
So I would say the Pilates comes first because I put them on the reformer first and go through footwork, and then I usually go to the short box. So I like doing footwork and the short box exercises to see what's going on. And then sometimes I'll keep going with, so I change the order a little bit with new people
Yes, of
or people that
course.
haven't done it before. And sometimes I'll just keep going with the reformer and move them around to different equipment, you know, to help them feel something better or understand in a clearer way. But then if they're having a tough time getting something and I can tell they need maybe some specific muscle strengthening, I'll take them to the mat and I'll do Soma training from Gi. So if I can tell that somebody doesn't understand how to internally rotate very well, their femur, for example, I might do some internal rotation strengthening and then get back on the reformer. So I would say it starts with Pilates, and then I'll try to get more precise and clean things up with the Soma training. And then I'll end with the L-DOA, usually to give them homework, or not usually, always.
Is that usually how you end your Pilates classes with L-DOA?
Almost always, the exception of I have some people that I swear they come just to do the hanging at
Yes.
the end. So that's how they finish it. Yeah.
It's interesting that you take the client first to the reformer and you do footwork, because that's pretty much like watching their gait without having to deal with gravity. And just what you were saying before about taking all the curves out of the spine to find that straight, flat back, that's also an assessment tool for you. So it would make sense if you did footwork and then you went to short box because you would see how the body flexes, how the spine stays straight or extends or rotates. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I love using short box as the assessment because when you look at it, really what's going on is you're going through all the movements of the spine. You're doing flexion of the spine, extension of the spine, rotation, side bending, and translation. So we do it all. And you can see where someone has less awareness with their movement, for example, you know?
Can you explain translation for those who haven't heard that term?
Yes. So, for example, when we're doing, let's say, side to side on the short box, and you'll see people teach this different ways, right? Like sometimes you're doing a lateral flexion or a side bending where you're pulling the ribs down to the pelvis.
Candy cane.
Other times they tell you not to do this and to
Right.
not do that and move to the side. Instead of pulling your ribs down towards your pelvis, you have to translate your spine to one side. So it's kind of like a horizontal movement of the spine to then get in that one long line. Did that explain it well?
It's either that candy cane shape where you go up and over, and there is that compression, that shortening of the ribs to the pelvis and the lengthening on the other side, opposed to staying in a flat back, taking your spine forward and then moving over to the side. That's where you're having that translation.
No, so the translation happens side to side. So maybe a better way to explain it is if, like, looking at the neck, this becomes clearer. So if you were to bring your hands above your head and place the palms together with the elbows wide to the side of the ears and move one ear to the side and then the other ear to the side, this like almost totally horizontal movement. Yes, exactly. That this is the translation.
But you wouldn't necessarily do that with someone, for example, who had scoliosis, would you? Or it doesn't matter if there's spinal pathology. You're still trying to move the rib cage side to side.
Yeah, I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't want to do that with scoliosis to warm up the spine and encourage movement there. Yeah.
Would you also include tree in the short box, or would you just?
For the assessment, yes. Yes. I love having people do. I feel like I learned so much from having people do the tree. Like you can, yes, you can see how comfortable they are with like a more dynamic movement. You can see how they feel about balancing. You can see even if they can just like distinguish the flexion of their hip from the flexion of the knee. Yeah, there's a lot of information that comes from that.
And you have been, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say something else that I think has influenced the way I teach Pilates from Eldoa. So in Eldoa, we talk about what's called factors of progression, which is basically how you would customize an exercise for an individual person to meet their needs and to make it as successful as possible for them and as challenging as possible. So it's kind of this breaking things down and then ramping it up again to be more challenging. And I think you can totally do that with all of the Pilates exercises. And we do that and learn that here and there in the training already. But I feel like it's made that process even clearer for each exercise, how to break it down into parts.
Are there a lot of classical teachers in Berlin?
When I moved here, there weren't so many, but I feel like there's more now, even just in the 4 years that I've been here. I know that Alicia Ungaro was doing a training, like a satellite training for real Pilates at a studio here in Berlin. So there's some people. In fact, one of the teachers that works with me went through that training program. And then there's other people that have moved here with the classical training background. But I would say that Berlin as a whole, you see a lot more contemporary Pilates. But then you go somewhere like Stuttgart that's in the south, and it's mostly, from what I can tell, classical Pilates. But that's because there's a teacher there that trained with Ramana and has a training program. And so that's the Pilates that people are exposed to there. Whereas here, there's only more contemporary trainings.
Have the contemporary teachers embraced Eldoa?
Yes. I have two colleagues now that are contemporary, or more than two maybe, that are certified Eldoa trainers.
It'd be curious to have a classically trained and a contemporary trained teacher and to use Eldoa on their individual bodies using a familiar Pilates exercise and to see how their background influences and informs how they interpret the Eldoa.
Yes. And where you see it the most, I would say, is with the shoulder blades. And people just get so confused about what to do with their shoulder blades in the Eldoa. And it's not just from the Pilates background. I think you see it in fitness in general. But getting told, you know, to always pull the shoulder blades down and in, for example, which this, we don't do this in the Eldoa. The shoulder blades are like going up to the ears and pulling apart and spreading apart, sometimes wrapping around the ribs. And also with the ribs as well, and like whether you let the ribs flare forward or not, or pulling them back. And so you'll see people want to instruct the Eldoa based off of what they've learned is good posture in their Pilates program, whatever type it is. And yes, it depends on what they've been taught by their teachers. And I find that that's quite a tricky thing to teach people out of.
You know, Joe apparently spoke and cued about keeping a broad, wide back. That would imply that mm-hmm. the shoulder blades are on the rib cage and wide and apart. That can't necessarily happen if all the muscles around the shoulder blades are very locked and the spine in that area is locked. So I'm assuming that Eldoa really addresses the release of the shoulder blade.
Yeah. So if I have people the area you're talking about, the shoulder blades on top of the ribs there in Eldoa, we have an Eldoa for this. We call that a joint. That's the scapulothoracic joint, or the serratothoracic joint, it's called sometimes. And it's the space between the shoulder blade and the ribs. And you have the serratus anterior muscle there and the subscapularis muscle. You know, you're supposed to have movement there. And a lot of times things get stuck. And so, yeah, if I see, like if I'm doing rowing, for example, and it's coming all from their arms are moving and I don't see the shoulder blades moving at all, then we go and we do some strengthening for the muscles in that region, stretches, and the Eldoa for the scapulothoracic joint. And a lot of times, it might not even be that people aren't strong in that region or that something's actually stuck. They just don't have the awareness of how they can move in that region. And so I think you do these awareness exercises in LDOA to bring their mind to that part of the body. And then the Pilates is so beautiful for them to actually execute those movements and feel what their shoulder blades can do for them in something like rowing, you know?
It seems much kinder and more logical and inclusive, so that instead of fighting and fighting an exercise, and so the spring becomes, I don't want to say your enemy, but it's certainly not your dance partner, to be able to know it's okay to stop the flow. Mm-hmm. If someone's having problems between rowing one and two, you already see it. Get them off the reformer. You do whatever you think is the best. Then they come back in, they sit down, and they have a little bit more awareness, like you're suggesting they will acquire.
I got told, I remember in the beginning of my time doing Pilates, that I just wasn't strong enough to do certain exercises. And I feel like even if you're not saying that, but you're implying that, this is really not good for their future with Pilates and with exercise. Like I've had a client that she's in her 50s. And the first time she did the teaser on the reformer, she started crying because there was an exercise similar to this that she had to try to do in grade school. And she could never do it. And she kind of got shamed for it. And nobody ever like gave her options to try or anything or how to resolve it. And so she just grew up thinking, yep, there's just things I can't do with my body. I'm just not strong enough, or I'm not flexible enough, or something. And I think it's important to realize that these things really stick with people. You know, it is a sensitive topic. And I think most people like to feel strong and in control of their bodies. And so I think it's something that needs to be approached delicately by giving people options and encouraging them that they can do it in some capacity, you know? And usually it's not a strength issue. It's an awareness issue. And I feel like that doesn't get enough attention.
Oh, I fully agree. Well said.
Yeah.
In closing, this is a very interesting. Now you're going to learn more about Sarah's life outside of Pilates, LDOA, and anything else in the body. When we were doing our pre-interview, I heard her speaking to something or someone off camera, and her tone, I could tell it was going to be a pet. And I asked her, I'm assuming it's going to be a dog or a cat. And lo and behold, I asked her, because I always want to meet guests' pets, part of the family. She goes to get her pet, and it is a pet rat. And that just opened up a whole other conversation about rats. And I thought, like, you'd like to share, what is your rat life about?
That's a good question. I find them to be so fascinating.
Well, how did a rat come into your life?
Yes. So I first interacted with pet rats sitting at an outdoor cafe when I was living in Asheville, and these people came and they had rats, and the rats were just crawling all over me, and I just loved them immediately and wanted to have them. But I had a cat, and she would not have tolerated this. No, not even an option. And unfortunately she died, and then I moved to Germany. And during the lockdown, my partner and I were thinking how we wanted to get pets, because we've both always had pets. And we were kind of going through the pros and cons of different animals. And at one point I said, well, what about rats? I've always wanted to have rats. And he also liked the idea of rats and knew someone that had pet rats growing up. So we got rats. And it's been, wow, it's been such a learning process of understanding how to best take care of them. And I feel like it's so interesting to see how people respond when I tell them I have pet rats. Like, usually they're really creeped out. They think it's gross, et cetera, et cetera. And I find this stigma against rats so interesting, because we have so much in our society to be grateful to them for. Like, modern medicine, for example, like the reason that we understand how a lot of pharmaceutical drugs interact with our body is due to experimentation on rats. Even a lot of the understanding that we have about the way the mind works is we should be grateful to rats for this. So I'm surprised that our society, you know, that everyone doesn't have pet rats and that everyone doesn't want to be, you know, as close to the rats as possible. But I get it. People think their tails are creepy. They can bite you. That's not nice when they bite. They have teeth like glass. So yeah, I mean, I get those parts of it, but
how many do you have?
I currently have 4. I've had as many as 5. They don't live very long, unfortunately. That's the hard part. They, on average, live a little over 1.5 years. So yeah, you get really attached and then they're gone.
And they do have different personalities?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So like right now, I have 2 brothers I got that, so most of the rats that I get, they've been given up because rats, you can't have just one. So then you get into this cycle of rat death where, you know, you'll get down to just 1 or 2 and you're supposed to have at least 3. So then you have to decide, oh gosh, do I get more?
Oh no.
And continue, or do I give them up? And I know someone in my neighborhood that she kind of takes in orphan rats or rescued rats. And so that's where I've gotten most of my rats from. So right now I have these 2 brothers that nobody wanted them because they're biters. I was down to just 1 rat at the time, and I'd had one that died unexpectedly. So I was leaving him with her while I went on holiday. And I said, do you have any that you can integrate him with so he's not alone? And she was like, oh, well, I have these 2 up there, but I don't know.
The biters.
And I said, well, look, if they like him, I'll deal with, you know, if they get along, then we can manage. And sure enough, they loved one another. And so I have him and the 2 bitey brothers, one of which I can hold now and snuggle him. The other one, he just doesn't like to be held, but he likes to play with cat toys and they like to play hide and seek. So I'll like sit on the ground and put a blanket over my legs and they run under and I kind of grab at them through the blanket being like, where are you? Got you. And he'll do that with me. So we definitely interact and have a relationship, but I don't get to snuggle him. And then I have another one that he doesn't really stay still, but he loves to just like run all over me and get kisses and is really sweet. So yeah, whereas in the past I've had some that like they would live under my shirt if they could. Like they like to just like lay on my belly under my shirt and just get like pet. And I had one that he would have just been there the whole time.
Fascinating. It does make me think of Joe and his observations of cats. And mm-hmm. what he learned about stretching. Have you learned anything from your sweet little long-tailed biting rats?
I don't think I've learned anything about them in terms of working with clients or movement, but I would say the way that they take care of one another and the way that you integrate rats when they're not familiars is you put them in a small space together. Kind of, it's like, it's a little, I would say, I guess it's a little bit like trauma bonding, but not so traumatic. Okay. They just don't have their like cozy things and they're kind of together and they're forced to deal with one another and get to know one another and figure it out. And ultimately they want someone to snuggle with. So they figure it out and they lay with one another and this is how you integrate them. And I feel like that has kind of gives me hope for society. It makes me understand.
We just all need to snuggle.
Yeah. And going back to Joe and Pilates, I think a lot about how these exercises, you know, I think I was reading Caged Lion and I thought it was interesting how I think it was in that book about Pilates I was reading that it was implied that Joe came up with all these exercises actually while he was incarcerated. In a small space, right? And trying to keep his body healthy and his mind sane. And I think about how the Pilates machines are so popular in urban areas and these kind of like, we've kind of self-imposed ourselves in these small cells, you know, small spaces. and that we need that kind of movement on the machines really helps us to feel okay in these, you could say, restricted areas. But at the same time, I think it's healthy for us as humans, like looking at the rats, to be so close together and learn to deal with one another and understand one another, et cetera. But yeah, I think a lot about how the machines kind of turn us into cyborgs. And I don't know if you're familiar with Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto or not, but I've been meaning to like write an essay or an article about this. I just don't have the time to do it. But now that there's ChatGPT, I might get it to write it for me about how the machines help optimize our bodies for for urban living.
That's really interesting. That's an interesting approach. Yes, I think you better.
I'll get AI to write it for me.
Yes, get AI.
That's very, and it's appropriate, right?
Yes, exactly. Very appropriate. If teachers want to learn more about Eldoa, what you have to offer, how best to reach out to you?
So if you want to learn about Eldoa in the U.S., or actually globally, there's a website called Eldoa Voyer. So that's E-L-D-O and then V-O-Y-E-R, E's last name, .com. And that should have all the practitioners worldwide and the certification courses taking place in the U.S. If you want to find me specifically, I do all of my business stuff under the name Authentic Body Control. So that's how you could find me on Instagram or email, and I'm fairly responsive. I'm one of those people that like I can't leave messages unread. So you can write me on any of those things and find me. And if anybody has questions about where to train, I can put you in touch with colleagues that are closest to them where they can do Eldoa or even just take a class.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. What an interesting life you have, Sarah.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun. It continues to be fun. I feel really lucky.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again for your time and all of your sharing of, it's fascinating, Eldoa. It seems as if it might be a modality that is simple enough to comprehend and feel in the body and yet have a profound outcome when you step back into the Pilates studio.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like it really helps build that awareness. And it can be even more, like we've only talked about it at the joint level, but it can go way more profound than that as far as like dealing with the nervous system and the fascia. And I didn't even touch on all those pieces, but yeah, people can get into it and look at all that later.
There are books that people could get.
No, there aren't any books about Eldoa. And in fact, Guy is not so much a fan of written text for the trainings. He's much more, I would say, a person of oral tradition. So he'll let us like record him talking about it. You can find lots of videos on YouTube about it. But no, there's not a book
yet
about it.
Maybe you need someone like you that can integrate both, the oral and the written.
Yeah. I appreciate the oral tradition though, but yeah, people will pick apart things when they're written down too much. I think probably this is
in the body.
Why Joe did too much documentation of things either, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks for your interest.
Yes. Thank you.
All Things Pilates is produced, written, edited, and hosted by me, Darian Gold. Mastered audio mix by Fabian Romero. This season, we have all original music by AKA Johnny. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, you have the opportunity to support it for as little as $3 a month. You'll see the link in the show notes, and just know that every dollar helps me continue to bring you the most interesting guests in the Pilates community. I once had a pet rat. Her name was Peppy. She lived in my closet in a cage until at night, when I'd open the cage door so she could explore my bedroom. Late at night, as I'd toss around in bed, I'd find her sleeping next to my leg. It was a familiar warmth that somehow always softened me back to sleep. As a youngster, did you have a meaningful connection with a pet? Sometimes humanity can't give us what we need, and so caring for our animals is paramount to remaining grounded. Thanks so much for being with us, and meet you here in a couple of weeks for another episode of All Things Pilates.